Might be a bluff. They're trying to get you to fold up by showing you a big, mean grog. I'll go out there. It's my skull.
And end up like Fontaine? No. Oh,
that means a feud. Oh, Lord, Lord.
Sir, I'll take a whack at this grog.
Hundreds of heads turned in his direction. The dispatcher straightened.
You ever even held a legworm crook, son?
I played grounders with grogs.
Leastways, if he gets his head bashed in, it's no feud.
Can we trust you, David?
I don't see how you can lose. You're ready to forfeit. Worst thing that could happen is that you pay the ransom anyway and get your riders back.
Let David do it. Let him take that Goliath.
Okay, boy. Strip down and grab your crook.
I got one request, dispatcher.
What's that?
Can I borrow a pair of underwear? Mine aren't fit for public display.
Valentine stood behind a blanket held up by Anka as he stripped. Zach held out a white pair of shorts.
Hey, they look a little odd, but they're the best thing for riding. They're military issue up in Indiana for their bike troops. Everything stays tucked up real tight.
Thank you.
Anka hovered as he tried on the shorts.
My David, let me try my luck at this.
I'm from Minnesota, old horse. Born with a hockey stick in my hand.
Then you will be careful out there.
Since when am I anything but?
And what year were you born? Be careful. If it is a gray one, when they are on all fours and running, they cannot turn their heads or hear very well behind. He will not see you if you come at him from the side.
Understood.
Price paced back and forth as Bee pulled up and chewed on dandelion roots. Valentine wondered where Duvalier had gone. But then a sporting event, even one as deadly serious as this, probably wasn't of interest to her. The shorts were snug-fitting, running from his waist to mid-thigh. The padded white pouch at the groin made him feel like one of the come-hither boys that strutted on the streets of New Orleans.
Oh, that's cute.
Better than the ones with 3 weeks of trail.
Anka dropped the blanket and walked with Valentine, Price, and Bee to the center of the line of spectators. Valentine walked barefoot, testing the field soil. Some murmured about the burns on his lower back and legs. The dispatcher stood at the center of the line with the 12-foot legworm crook, looking like a warrior out of some medieval tapestry.
I can still order it called off.
I can't resist a challenge.
Well, you look fit enough, except for the limp. Hope you can run.
I can run.
Valentine tried the crook, an all-wood version of the one he'd seen Zach use. Its hooked end had a rounded point.
Using metal isn't considered sporting.
Any rule on length?
Yes, can't be over 15 feet.
How about, say, 7?
You must be joking. A grog can already outreach you. You'll just be cutting yourself shorter.
I'd rather swing a handy short crook than an awkward long one.
Anka buried his old TMCC utility machete into the haft of the crook where Valentine indicated and broke it over his knee. Valentine tried the crook again. Now he could run with it. 500 yards away, in the center of the field, the grog waited. He looked huge even at this distance.
Good luck, David.
Is anyone taking odds?
You don't want to know.
All you have to do is get the ball back to our line.
Valentine marked the stakes, stretching 100 yards to either side with the crowd spread out behind.
How you do it is up to you.
Valentine looked at Anka. The Golden One's ears twitched in anxiety, but one of the great limpid eyes winked. Valentine raised his arm to the crowd and turned to walk into the center of the field, stretching his arms and legs as he went. The legworm ride yesterday had tasked his muscles in a new way, a trace of stiffness which gave him a good deal more cause to doubt. He wondered how the bulletproof would feel about a valiant try. The referee wore taped-up glasses and a modest crucifix. He carried a basketball under his arm and leaned over to speak to the grog as Valentine approached the halfway point. Valentine noticed a pistol in a holster with a lanyard running up to the referee's neck. The grog rivaled Anka in size, almost as tall and a good deal wider of shoulder and longer of arm. Pectoral muscles, like Viking round shields, twitched as he shifted his half-ton of weight from side to side. The grog's legworm crook lay before his massive hands as though to establish a line Valentine would never cross.
You're Tuck?
Change of programming. I'm David.
David, your wildcat opponent is Vista. Vista, your bulletproof opponent is David. Don't touch me or you forfeit. Interference by anyone else also results in a forfeit for the interfering side.
The referee indicated a pair of flat river stones.
This mark is the center of the field, agreed to by your respective dispatchers.
As the grog yawned, it displayed a melon-sized gullet guarded by 4-inch yellow incisors capped with steel points, top and bottom. The great double-thumbed hand picked up the long crook. Valentine noted the hook on Vista's crop had been chewed to a sharpened point and hoped that his intestines wouldn't end up draped over the loop at some point. The referee held out the basketball.
The object of the contest is to get this ball to your own line. The game begins when the ball hits the ground and ends when the winner brings it home to his own goal line. I'll fire my pistol in the air to indicate a victory. Any questions?
The referee stepped to the two stones in the center. Neither said anything. Vista glared at Valentine. Valentine stared back. The referee held out the ball between them, and when he lowered it for the bounce toss, the grog was looking away.
May the best, contestant win.
The referee tossed the basketball straight up into the air and backpedaled out from between man and grog, quickly enough that Valentine felt air move. Valentine felt not at all encouraged and took a few steps back out of clobbering range as Vista raised his crook. The ball struck. Valentine's brain registered that it took a wildcat bounce. Helped along by a quick swing of Vista's crook that Valentine didn't have the length to intercept. But Vista went for him instead of the ball. The grog leaped forward, using one of his long arms as a decathlete might use a pole. And upon landing, swung his crook for the air occupied by Valentine. If Vista didn't want the ball, Valentine would take it. Valentine sprinted after the ball, now rolling at a very shallow angle toward the bulletproof on its second bounce. The instinct to just go toe-to-toe with Vista and decide the contest in a brawl surged for a moment, but he'd lose. Valentine looked back to see Vista galloping toward the ball, crook clenched at the midpoint in those wide jaws. Grog's running on all fours looked awkward, but they were damn fast. Valentine cut an intercepting course.
Vista, you messed up.
The grog's crook had the hook end on Valentine's side. Taking great lungfuls of air, Valentine poured it on. He reached forward with his own hook, Vista's head invisible behind the mountainous shoulders, and latched his hook to Vista's. Valentine planted his feet to bring the racing grog down the way a cowboy would turn a cow's head. The field smacked Valentine in the face as he landed, yanked off his feet by 5 times his weight in charging grog. The crook slipped away like a snake. By the time he looked up again, Vista had retrieved Valentine's crook and used it to give the ball a whack, sending it farther toward the wildcat line. Vista left off the contest. Instead of following the ball to a likely victory, he advanced on Valentine, long crook in his left hand, held hook out, and Valentine's shorter one looking like a baton in the right. Apparently, the wildcat dispatcher wanted to teach the bulletproof a lesson.
You wily gray bastard. You suckered me!
Animal triumph shone in Vista's eyes. Valentine tasted blood from a cut lip. The referee ran across the periphery of Valentine's vision, moving for a better angle on events. Valentine stood up, swiping the dirt from his knees as he watched Vista advance, and ran his tongue along the inside of his teeth. Vista raised his twin weapons, stamping his feet and banging the crooks together. Valentine raised his middle finger in return. The grog knew what that meant. It charged, wild-eyed. Valentine ran away. He felt the long crook tug at his hair and ran harder. Vista couldn't sprint with weapons in his hands, so the grog paused. Valentine used the precious second to achieve some distance, then settled into his old pounding wolf run, pretending his aching left leg didn't exist. Vista gained on him slowly, but only by sprinting full tilt, and the grog couldn't breathe as well with 2 crooks crammed into its bear trap-like mouth. Valentine slowed a little, listening to the footfalls behind, but didn't dare look back. A trip and a sprawl would be fatal. Vista slowed. The grog's eyes no longer blazed, but were clouded by new doubt, and it came to a halt perhaps 100 yards from the bulletproof line. Valentine glanced back and saw Anka making a sawing motion with one of his mighty arms. Vista dashed off at an angle southward, running an oblique course for the wildcat line.
Not you now.
Valentine's crook spun past his nose, and he sidestepped and caught it as it bounced in the air. With fresh energy, he tore toward the Wildcat side and the distant ball, hidden by a gentle fold in the earth.
Sorry, Vista. Keep your temper next time.
But the Grog had unguessed at reserves. It pounded up behind Valentine like a galloping horse. Valentine risked a glance over his shoulder and saw Vista running in a two-leg, one-arm canter, the long crook raised to catch him. Vista swung. And Valentine blocked. Valentine shielded his back against another blow and hurried on. Then got a painful rap on the knuckles that opened his hand, and he lost his crook for the second time. He could run better without it anyway. Now for a real burn. Valentine ran, extending his sprint. Were he still a fresh wolf of 22 with an uninjured leg, he would have left Vista gaping behind. As it was, he increased the distance, but only just. The ball would be an awkward thing to carry. Under his arm, he wouldn't be able to run with a proper stride. Held in each hand, he'd be running upright, not a natural human motion. He could kick it, but what if he mistimed an approach and missed? If only he had a satchel. Valentine spotted the ball and changed his angle. Vista slowed behind him, perhaps conserving his wind to intercept Valentine on his sprint back. Even more distance yawned between them. The referee caught up on both of them. Valentine reached the ball and ignored the catcalls. Vista pulled up, perhaps 40 yards away. He left ample room to cut an intercepting course. Valentine dropped his shorts. Someone on the Wildcat side had enough of a sense of humor to whistle. Valentine picked up the ball and stuffed it into the elastic waistband, then closed most of the waist in his fist. The ball was too big to go out the leg holes. Vista cocked his head, oddly dog-like, with ears outstretched. Holding the ball in the improvised sack, Valentine ran straight at him. The Grog, perhaps fearing another trick, widened his stance and rocked back and forth, crook held loosely in his right hand. At three strides away, Valentine fainted right, away from the crook. Then leaped. He tucked the ball into his belly as he flew through the air, not wanting it batted away as he went over Vista's head in a great cat leap. It swung its crook where Valentine should have been. Valentine landed lightly on his good leg. Had a bad split second when Vista's thrown crook struck him in the ankle and ran, feeling rapidly growing pain from the blow. Valentine managed to open the distance between them. Bulletproof danced behind their markers, some urging him on by circling their arms and wheels toward the red tape. Valentine crossed the line and fell into a mass of bulletproofs. He felt a sharp slap on his bare buttock and looked to see a craggy-faced woman giving him a gap-toothed grin. Valentine turned to look at his opponent. Vista collapsed to his wide knees, pounding at the turf with great fists. Valentine took the basketball out of his underwear, gave up trying to reach the dispatcher, and tossed the ball in the air. Limping, Valentine went out to Vista. The Grog jumped up. Valentine offered his hand. The Grog snatched him up by the arm and lowered his head with mouth gaping to bite it off at the wrist. The Grog pulled back, a bleeding hole in its cheek. Valentine spun out of reach. The referee trotted up, pistol held pointed at the Grog.
Back to our side! Back!
The Grog turned away. The referee lowered his gun and looked at Valentine from beneath a sweat-dripping brow.
You, sir, are one dumb son of a bitch. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Anka loomed up.
My David!
I'm fine. A little bruised.
The dispatcher and Zach joined them, the former with the basketball, the latter holding Valentine's clothes.
What did you yell? He forgot all about me.
I accuse his mother of the lowest caste choice of mates. Such an insult can only result in a duel. He started to answer me when you ran.
Maybe you'd better stay in camp when David goes to collect his share.
Share?
You won. A portion of the recovered herd is yours.
And I owe you a great debt. Dispatcher, may I go along and collect my sister?
Go in my place. But keep away from the Grog. One blood contest a season is enough.
The Wildcats fell back from their side of the field as they crossed, Valentine holding the basketball up as though it were a torch, per Zack's instruction. A huge legworm, longer than the one Valentine had ridden into the bulletproof camp, led six unreined worms onto the contest field. Valentine watched them pull up soil, weeds, and hay stubble like plows. Three riders sat astride the broad back in the flying carpet side saddle seat Valentine was beginning to recognize.
That's Tika. She's the reiner.
Tika had sun-washed, caramel-colored hair, plumed into a lusher version of the foxtail her brother wore, and the tan, wind-burned face of a woman who seldom knew a roof. The man behind her was shirtless, with bandages wrapped around his midsection. The third rider, a beefy, gray-haired woman, evidently kept the tradition of the third rider being older.
Watch the whiskers on the unreined legworms. Tika! Look at the trouble you cause!
Talk to the herd.
Yeah. The dispatcher won't allow us to ride together, David. Too many brawls.
I thought it was cousins who liked to fight in these parts.
Fight?
Or kiss. Fact is, I don't feel guilty about either. I'm adopted.
Valentine spent the rest of the day mildly worried. Duvalier had tucked a note in his pack.
Checking out the other camp. Back tonight. Meow.
And she had not returned. Valentine found himself a minor celebrity in the camp. As he limped around on his sore ankle, bulletproof children came up and bumped him with their fists and elbows. He explored the camp with Price, trying to stave off the coming stiffness by keeping his muscles warm. He looked at some of the carts and sledges the legworms towed. Many held loads of fodder or sides of meat, but one, under guard near the dispatcher's tent, had a generator and racks of military radio gear.
There'll be a party tonight. Weather's nice and the herders will disperse.
The little contest this morning. Does anyone ever not pay up when they lose?
That's why they bring together as much of the tribe as they can. Sort of like wearing your gun at a poker game.
Valentine and Anka did laundry at the wash tubs. The other bulletproofs doing washing insisted on giving them soap flakes and the outside lines for drying their clothes. A woman carrying 6 months of baby under a tie front smock hinted that Valentine would be getting some new clothes that night.
They're going round for donations.
By nightfall, a raucous throng of legworm herders surrounded the barn like a besieging army. Their rain-pierced mounts stood along the road ditch in lines, eating a mixture of grains and hay dumped into the ditch. Valentine didn't feel much like joining. His legs had been filled with asphalt, his ankle had swelled, and his shoulder blade felt like a chiropractor had moved it 4 inches up. He stayed out in the warm night and ate beans from a tin plate, scooping them onto a thick strip of bacon, and watched Anka make a new pack for B out of a legless kitchen chair the Golden One had traded for somewhere. Zack came out of the darkness.
Oh, everyone wants to see you. Dispatcher himself asked for you.
I'm tired, Rainer.
Well, just for a moment. You're bulletproof now. You gotta have a sip.
A sip?
It's where we get our name. What do you think it meant? Kevlar? We got some char barrel aged Kentucky bourbon.
Well, you should have opened with that, Zack. I'd have been up there already.
Valentine scraped off his plate into the legworm feed bucket. Every bite adds an inch, was written on the side. Inside the barn, Valentine entered to applause and whoops. He kept forgetting he was supposed to hate these people. Perhaps they'd bred the legworms that destroyed Foxtrot Company at Little Timber Hill. But they carved out a life, apparently free of the Reapers. He had to give them credit for that. A wood-staved cask, big enough to bathe in, stood upon two sawhorses near the band, each of whom had a sizable tumbler tucked under their chair as they scraped and strummed and plucked away. Tika, in a fringed version of her brother's leathers, gave him a welcoming hug that allowed Valentine a whiff of leather-trapped feminine musk. Then she took Zack's hand and pulled him away. The dispatcher poured drinks into everything from soup bowls to elegant crystal snifters with the help of Cookie at the tap.
Our man of the night. How do the victory garlands feel?
They're turning purple.
Valentine accepted a proffered thick-bottomed glass from Cookie. A quarter cup of amber liquor rolled around the bottle.
Some bulletproof will take the edge off.
Just a splash, please, sir. I don't hold my liquor well.
It's that cheap radiator busted you flattest brew in the Midwest is why. Bulletproof's got aroma and character.
Blows your damn head off. That's why we called it bulletproof in the first place. Enjoy.
The dispatcher raised his own glass and brought it halfway to Valentine. Valentine touched his glass to the dispatcher's. The liquor bit, no question, but it brought an instantaneous warmth along for the ride.
He's bulletproof now! Bring out his leathers!
parade of bulletproof wives and daughters came forward, each holding a piece of leather or armor, a jacket with shoulder pads sewn in, pants, boots, gloves, a gun belt, something that looked like spurs. Valentine stood a little dumbly as they piled the gear on his shoulders and around his feet. It was a dull gunmetal color and made him think of a knight errant.
Zach! Where'd he get to? Zach!
Right here!
Zach came in from the gaping doorway to the barn, Tika in tow, both looking a little disheveled.
Zach, show David how to wear his leathers!
Valentine, Zach, and Tika picked up pieces of his new outfit and went outside. He'd seen breastplates like the one they strapped on before. They were an old army composite, hot as hell, made you feel like a turtle, but they could stop shrapnel.
Oh, you got old Snelling's rig. He was a good rainer. If a bit flash for the bulletproof. Dropped stone dead of a heart attack one hot summer day while climbing his mountain. You never know.
No, you don't.
Zach says you're a flatty?
Iowa, but I left when I was young. I spent a lot of time in the Gulf.
That where you picked up them scars?
Pretty much. What's this on the sleeve?
A series of hooks, reminding Valentine a little of sharpened alligator teeth, ran down the outside seam of the forearm of the jacket.
Serrates. They're for digging in when you mount or hanging on to the side.
Zach showed him how to fix the spurs, which were a little more like the climbing spikes utility linemen wore to reach their wires. They could be flipped up and locked flush to the inner side of the boot. Locked down, they projected out and down from his ankle.
Some guys put them on their boot points. I think that looks queer.
Valentine explored the padding in the jacket shoulders and elbows. Military Kevlar plates were buttoned into the back and double-breasted front. The pants had stiff plastic caps on the knees and shins.
You can take the bulletproofing out, but we generally wear it. Can be a lifesaver.
Valentine felt a bit like a porcupine. His old cat claws would fit right in on this outfit. He could wear them openly, and they'd just look like another set of spikes.
How do you two kiss without harpooning each other?
That's just part of the fun.
Don't make fun of the leathers. A lot of effort goes into each one.
Fine stitching.
Well, I don't mean that. That's legworm egg casing, stretched and dried. Getting it is trickier than threading a full-grown legworm for reins. You have to go into a breeding pile and get the egg right after it hatches, because it rots fast if you don't get it scraped out and dried. You have to help the little bugger inside out of it, or he'll eat almost the whole thing. And if you hurt a legworm grub doing that, the adults stomp everything inside.
It's kind of a rite of passage for our youth. They have to go into the winter dog piles and check on the eggs. When they come out with a hide, they're considered full-grown members of the tribe.
Thank you for skipping that step with me. I'll wear it with pride.
But be careful, Dave. There are lots in town that look down on riders. You get called a hillbilly and a grog fucker, and worse. Some think riding herd on a legworm's the same as cleaning up after a gaunt.
Phew, he looks too fine for that kind of talk, Zach.
How do you do the foxtails in your hair?
Easy. There's a cut-down pine cone attached to the tie. Some braid their hair around it. I can show you. Now that you've got a few worms, you should look the part.
Zach, I want to talk to you about that. I'm passing through. Hoffman Price brought us up here in the hope that we'd get a guide to the Ohio River, up around Ironton or Portsmouth. I'll swap you my share of the recovered beast for a ride.
Well, I've got a bigger string a little to the west. I'm leaving early tomorrow to get back to him.
Well, then I'll drive you. That way I'll get my string back.
He's already got a girl, Tika. You'll have to excuse my sister, Dave. She's man crazy.
Any girl who doesn't want a husband by 20 and babies after is man crazy, in my brother's opinion. Oh, Zach, you know you're the only one for me.
Only one? When I'm around, that is. And that's just because I keep saying no to a train.
Yeah.
Tika tried to stomp Zach with her heavy riding boot, but he danced out of the way.
You're a fresh piece of worm trail, Zachary Stark.
What in the hell are you wearing, David Black?
Alessa Duvalier stepped from the darkness. She wore her long coat, black side turned out, and carried her walking stick.
And that's the girl, Tika.
Zach grabbed for his sister's long hair. She dodged out of the way and got behind Valentine. Valentine smelled blood on her.
Apparently I'm bulletproof now. What do you think?
I'm tempted to get your pistol and test you. Starving. Is there any food left?
Sure, I'll show you. Excuse us.
Valentine led her up to the food tables, and she cut open a loaf and filled it with barbecue. They went back to their camp in the empty field. Anka and B were wrapped up in a fireside game that involved piling buttons on a rounded rock.
Price is walking his mule. Did they offer us transport, my David?
Oh, he's got a ride. Count on him.
What have you been up to?
I didn't miss your performance this morning. I just watched it from the Wildcat side. I was checking out these camps. There's some bad blood between these, tribes.
You've made it worse?
Of course. We might want to shift a little more to the west. When it got dark, I offed a couple of the Wildcats and left a note warning them not to use grogs in any future contests. They were already stirred up because someone got shot when they captured those bulletproofs. When they see what I did to the bodies, it ought to put them over the edge. A lot of their riders were upset that they let it go with just a contest. This should put them right over the edge.
Anka sent a cascade of buttons down the side of the rock and bowed to B. He got up and went over to the wrapping for his oversized gun. Valentine rose and looked across the ridge with the Wildcat campfires. Had some of them gone out? He should have counted. Captain Lahav would have taken a piece out of his ass for that kind of sloppiness. He picked up his U-gun.
Wait here. If shooting starts, let's meet at the creek we crossed just before we turned in here.
Val, what are you doing?
I'm going to warn them.
Why? The bulletproof will probably win. There's more of them. It'll get a good war started between these assholes.
They're kids all over the place.
Nits make lice, Val.
Is that who you really are?
Whose side are you on, Ghost? I know the answer. Your egos.
Valentine hurried up to the barn, the new leather pants creaking as he trotted. His ankle hurt, but seconds might count. The party was still in full cry, and Zack and Tika were stomping the concrete with boot heel and toe in syncopation, another quarrel forgotten. Valentine went straight for the dispatcher. The crowd parted, alarmed at the U-gun. Valentine carefully carried it pointed down, his hand well away from the trigger area. Zack stepped in at his rifle arm.
Oh, Dave, there's no need.
Watch that weapon, David. What's going on? Pants too tight and you're looking for the tailor?
The dispatcher. Our grogs were down looking at the contest field. They went off to some bushes to, you know.
And?
They saw the Wildcats. Some of them on their worms, armed. Others gathered.
Coming this way?
Grogs just ran back. Armed riders is all I know.
Carpenter, get to the herd riders, have them try to lead the wild worms west. Mother Shaw, take the children out to the clover field. Everyone else who can shoulder a gun, get to the rain worms. Lead riders Manvey, French, Chernyowski, and McGee, come with me. David, you and your people with Zack. Zack, get them clear.
You might see some fancy riding after all.
The crowd dissolved, and the musicians cased their instruments. If not sober, at least sobered. Zack brought Valentine to his legworm at the road trough. Other riders were climbing on board, teenage boys watching the mounts, when a rocket cut across the sky, leaving a sparking trail. It exploded overhead. The legworm reared, but Zack settled it. Zack extended a hand, but Valentine found that with the hooks and spikes in his costume, climbing the side of the legworm was possible without assistance, as long as another shell didn't fire.
What the hell was that?
Yeah, big fireworks, sorta. Scares the worms. They're trying to make the mounts bolt.
Valentine saw one worm humping as it headed down the road, a rider raising dust as he was dragged. Another rocket only served to hurry the legworms in the direction they were already going. Zack reached their campsite.
Get on! We gotta ride out of here. Where's Price?
I don't know. Still off with his mule.
Valentine helped the others up. B looked alarmed and refused to mount. Anka reached out, but she slapped his hand away and ran off toward the road.
I'll drop you off with the kids in the cover field. You'll be safe there.
Take us to the fight.
Well, the dispatcher...
The dispatcher's gonna need every gun. We got three, right?
Valentine looked over his shoulder at Duvalier and Anka. Anka nodded. He had his cannon and Price's Kalashnikov. Duvalier patted her shotgun.
I'm happy to plant a few bobcats.
Wildcats.
Let's get online.
Valentine looked down at his U-gun. The only ammunition he had for it was Everready's 5.56mm. He wished he had a real sniper load. He looked at Duvalier's shotgun. The Mossberg would be useless in anything but a close quarters fight.
Allie, take Price's rifle.
Be sparing. There is only one magazine.
Where's the rest?
In boxes.
Ankar rummaged around in the battle satchel that contained spare bullets and gear for his gun and handed him the box. Cookie and Gibson joined them, and the legworm slid quickly down the hill to where the other riders were gathering. Cookie had his ear to a headset, coming from a hand-crank-charged portable radio. Another rocket exploded over the massive barn. Yellow-white sparks ran down the tin roof.
They're good with the fuses over there. Probably been cutting them all day. So you're a brother rider now.
Seems like.
Zack lined up his legworm behind another. Just behind them, in the center of the column of legworms, the dispatcher waved a flashlight. The column turned, and the legworms went single file up toward the barn.
If we go to the battle line, you, the girl, and the grog can cling to the cargo net and keep your heads down.
Valentine learned what battle line was as soon as they crested the hill and turned their line north. Another sky-cracking explosion over the barn sent a legworm humping over from the other side of the hill, its riders hanging on for their lives. The line of battle-ready legworms twitched, but stayed in station front to back. Cookie listened to his headset.
They're coming! Flank facing offside!
Women and teenage boys with rifles, hooks looped around their chests and attached to their ankles, joined the fighting line, adding their guns. The column moved in the direction the fleeing legworm had just abandoned. Valentine readied himself for what would be on the reverse slope of the hill when they topped it. Cookie slapped his thigh, headset to his ear.
Zack, we got them! They're in the field, not halfway across, in open order!
Zack's mount crested the hill and came down the other side, turning slightly as it followed the worm directly ahead. 20 or more legworms crept, or so it looked in the distance, in three columns across the contest field toward the bulletproof camp. Valentine took comfort in the thick length of legworm between him and the wildcats. It was like shooting from a movable wall. He thought of stories he'd read of fighting warships, their lines of cannons presented to each other. In naval terminology, the bulletproofs were crossing the T against the oncoming wildcats. The dispatcher's legworm followed theirs, and the one behind his let loose.
Whoa! Pipe organ's firing!
Streams of sparks cut down the hillside and exploded in the earth among the columns. The wildcat legworms began to turn and get into line to present their own bank of rifles to the bulletproofs, but the mounts kept trying to get away from the explosions. Machine guns from the front wildcat legworms probed their line, red tracers reaching for the riders. Another wildcat firework burst above. Valentine felt the legworm jump, but it had overshot. The bulletproof column accelerated. Zack employed his sharpened hook to urge the legworm along and close the gap that opened between his mount and the one ahead. Zack still had his rifle slung. His job was to keep his beast in line, not fight. Now the two masses of legworms, the bulletproofs tightly in line and moving quickly, the wildcats and an arrowhead-shaped mob converged. Ankar sighted and fired.
Damn!
Loading another shell, he shot again.
Ha! Got him!
A legworm in the wildcats turned, and others writhed to follow or to avoid its new course. Ankar picked off another driver.
That's some kind of shoot!
The front end of the bulletproof column began to fire. It had run ahead of the wildcats. The marksman got an angle on the exposed riders clinging to the right sides of their mounts. The wildcat column dissolved into chaos. Each legworm turned and hurried back toward their camp as fast as the hundreds and hundreds of legs could carry their riders.
That's how you win a scrap. Tight ride. Damn, if Manby can't point a cow.
It's because we were ready for him.
Cease fire!
The wildcats retreated in disorder. Valentine hadn't used a single bullet. More rounds of bulletproof were being issued as riders danced jigs. Other legworms, still with armed riders, circled the barn at a distance, though the scouts had claimed that the wildcats were decamping and heading for higher ground to the east.
Zack, take it you're willing to give our friends a ride north now. And if you aren't, I'll make it in order.
Of course I'm willing. I'm willing to dig a hole to hell if that's where they want me to drive a worm.
Your sister can go watch your strength.
Worm cast.
Better luck next time.
What's your destination over the Ohio?
We're trying to find an old relative. She's come up in the world, and we're going to see if she'll set us up.
Take Three Fingers Charlie, Zack. He's got connections with the smugglers. Tell him to trade egg hides if he has to. I want these folks set up so they can pass through the Ohio Ordinance in style.
I was scavenging for mule shoes. He found a mess of wild carrots, and they were fat and sweet, so I pulled up a bushel.
Hoo-hoo!
You missed one hell of a
I know. I saw it from a couple miles away. You bulletproofs throw one hell of a party. Fireworks and everything.
Price looked at the bourbon sloppy smiles all around.
What? Don't you all like carrots?
Valentine, Price, B, Ancah, and Duvalier stood at the Laurelton station a week later in a blustery rain. Zack and the other bulletproofs departed after depositing them in the care of a man named McNulty, a river rat trader and labor agent friendly to the tribe on the south bank of the Ohio. After introductions at the river rat's anchored barge house and one last round of bulletproof bourbon in farewell, Zack turned over 6 full legworm egg hides, cured and bound in twine. Valentine only parted with them after McNulty gave them Ohio ID cards, ration books, and an up-to-date map of the area. The residents kept to their towns. Patrolmen on bicycles, most armed with nothing more than a sap, rode the towns and highways. Valentine saw only one vehicle, a garbage truck full of coal. The ground reminded Valentine of some of the hills near the Iron Range in Minnesota, low and jumbled and full of timber. But where the forests in the Northwoods had stood since before the Sioux hunted, the forests in Ohio had sprung up since 2022, breaking up and overrunning the little plots carved out by man. So when they cautiously turned the bend nearing Laurelton, only to find more windowless houses and piles of weed-bearing brick, he couldn't help feeling deflated. There was a station, if a single siding counted as a station. The track continued north, but the height of the weeds, trees, and bracken suggested that a train hadn't passed that way in years. Valentine even checked the rust on the rails to be sure. In his days as a wolf, he'd seen supply caves hidden by saplings and bushes specifically pulled up and replanted to discourage investigation. Deep oxidation. He could scrape it off with a thumbnail.
Fool's hope. Rooster either lied or didn't have the correct information from the Currians. Maybe they divert the trains to keep the final destination secret.
Price unloaded his mule to give the animal a breather.
The debt is settled. I feel for you, David. Long way to come to find nothing. It's happened to me.
Post would know Valentine tried his best. How many vanished every year in the Currian Zone? 100,000? 500,000? But how do you laugh in a legless man's face and tell him the last rope he's clinging to isn't tied to anything but a wish? The narrow road bordering the track was in pretty poor condition. It certainly wasn't frequently traveled. Why here? Price filled the mule's nose bag, and B rooted inside one of the abandoned houses for firewood. Duvalier stretched herself out next to a ditch and took off her boots. The hills around Laurelton were close. 100 men, properly posted, could make sure that whatever transpired here couldn't be seen by anything but aircraft or satellites. Ancah poked around the road, examining potholes.
Strange sort of road, my David.
Valentine joined him. Like the tracks, it ended in weeds to the north. The south part had been patched. Valentine trotted a few hundred yards south. There was a filled gap in the road at a washout, recent enough for the asphalt to still be black-bluish rather than gray-green. The Currians weren't much on infrastructure maintenance, even in their best-run principalities. They didn't like anything that traveled faster than a reaper could run. Valentine examined the weeds and bracken bordering the station. Sure enough, there were 3 gaps, definite paths leading from the tracks to the road. Quick-growing grasses had sprung up, but no brambles or saplings, though they were thick on the west side of the tracks. Price revealed a sausage wrapped in wax paper and a loaf of bread.
A farewell feast, unless you want to come back with us.
Valentine handed him Everready's Reaper teeth.
More than earned. If I had another set, I'd give them to you with my initials written on them.
If you see the old squatter again, let him know I appreciate being able to repay the debt. What are you going to do next?
You said you brought in men to the ordnance?
Price consulted a scuffed leather notebook and extracted a card from a pocket.
Yep. I'm 314-58 here in Ohio.
He passed it to Valentine. The card had the number and some kind of seal featuring a man in a toga holding one hand over his heart and the other outstretched over a pyramid with an eye at the top.
Meaning what?
Don't know. They always recorded my number when I brought a man in, though.
How hard is it to get one of those?
I didn't even know I had to have one. They gave it to me when I brought my first man in. I was going to stop at one of the cop stations and look at what kind of warrants are out. Long as I'm up this way, maybe someone's hiding out in Kentucky I can bring in. Make the trip profitable in more than a spiritual sense.
Mind if I tag along?
Not at all.
Let's walk along the road on the way back to the river.
After Price flagged down a patrolman on the Riverside Highway, they stopped in the little Ohio side town of Caspian. An ordnance station, part police house, part customs post, and part post office, had the latest warrant flyers posted in a three-ring binder. Valentine and Price went inside, while the rest visited a market to buy food. They passed an Ohioan with a package on their way to the postal clerk.
Ugh, look what the river washed up.
Price helped Valentine select a handbill. Valentine wanted a female, 30-ish.
Not much to choose from. Guess Ohio women are law-abiding. Except for Gina Stoddard here.
Stealing power and unauthorized wiring. A desperado electrician.
She's all there is.
And what do I do next?
Follow me.
Price took three handbills of his own. The top man had killed a woman while trying to perform an illegal abortion and went over to a blue-uniformed officer behind a thick window. She blinked at them from behind thick corrective glasses. Price slid the handbills under the glass, along with his warrant card.
Copies of these, please, and...
Give me a moment.
She went to a cabinet. She got a key and disappeared into another room. 10 minutes later, perhaps she'd worked in a coffee break, she returned with the copies. They were poor quality photocopies, but still readable.
$6.
My associate needs a bounty card.
That makes it $16. You know, you could have said so. I have to make another trip to get one.
I'm sorry.
15 minutes later, she returned with the form. It had a numbered card on it, similar to Price's. Valentine filled it out using his Ohio ration card name, Tarkeen Ayub. Not a name Valentine would have chosen on his own. It came off his tongue like a horse getting wire-tripped, and passed it back under the partition. She counted the money, stamped both the document and the bounty card, then took out a scissors and cut the card free.
What's the number for?
If you got a prisoner in tow, you can get free food and lodging at any NUC door. They just need the number. Counts as good works for the ordnance lottery. Bring in a man or even a useful report and your number goes in that week. You can buy tickets too. This week's pot is $500,000. Care to enter?
I doubt we'll be in the ordnance long enough to collect. Thank you, officer.
They left the station and reunited with Duvalier and the Grogs at the riverbank, sharing a final meal. Price pulled up the mule's feet and inspected them one by one as B held the animal.
This really is goodbye.
Watch your curfew around here, son. Folks button up really tight. If you're solid silver lucky, the police pick you up and throw you in the clink for breaking it.
I'm gonna be poking around in Lexington for a bit. Ohio fugitives head there more often than not. There's jobs at the processing plants, and the West Kentucky Legion isn't too choosy about who it takes on. I'll check in at the depots.
Can I come back with you that far?
You want to give up?
This led nowhere, David. I don't want to stumble around ground I don't know. I feel like we stick out here. Everyone talks different, wears different clothes.
Give me 3 more days.
How far away will you be in 3 days?
Now I could dawdle along the river here for a bit. I never got my vacation in at the shack. I owe myself some fishing.
3 days worth?
3 days.
Lots of people here on bicycles. Price, where do you suppose we can rent some?
Price treated himself to a motel room. He found one with a distinctly non-discriminating owner when it came to personal hygiene, grogs, mules littering the weed-covered parking lot, and where the occupants poured their night soil. It turned out you couldn't rent bicycles, and no money could buy a bike capable of supporting Anka. By parting with yet another gold coin to a bike and moped dealer under a canopy of festive plastic bunting, Valentine and Duvalier each got bicycles with tires, functioning brakes, storage baskets, even clip-on flashlight headlamps that charged by pedaling. After some exploring with Anka, they found a house deep in the woods, not quite a cabin and not quite a shack. While it rested at a tilt, thanks to the absence of a foundation, there was a functioning well, and Anka got water flowing into the house again with a little tinkering and a lot of root cutting. The weather turned fair again, and Valentine and Duvalier bicycled together. Almost unarmed, he brought the .22 pistol, she her sword-carrying stick, starting at the nearest crossroads to the end of the line station and working their way outward, following roads heavy enough to support trucks. Valentine kept turning them to the north and east, into hillier and more isolated country. He couldn't say what drove him into this particular notch of Ohio. Perhaps it was a line of three legworms patrolling a ridge, glimpsed as they crept through the trees at a distance. Or it was the one true military convoy that passed them coming out of it. Three tractor trailers, with grog troops and supporting vehicles, and venerable 5-ton cargo trucks. They were only questioned once, by a pair of policemen also on bicycles. Valentine showed his card and the warrant for the renegade electrician, explaining that he'd learned she had a cousin who lived out in these woods.
Don't think so, Ayub. Even during deer season, most around here know to avoid the point country. You're better off searching the other side of the river.
So, on their third day, they risked a pre-dawn ride along the river road to get into the hills early. Other than the good condition of the roads in the region, Valentine couldn't point to anything but a feeling.
Ah, another feeling. Is it because you can't go back? Is that why you won't let this go? You need something to do? Even a ghost chase?
You've been good company. After today, you can go find the Life Weavers. Be sure to tell them about this.
Glad to, Val.
After a few hours, they breakfasted on bread and cheese. A green-painted military truck turned off from the river road and approached their position. Black smoke belched from its stack as the truck shifted up.
Wish we could find out where that's going.
Can do. Watch my coat.
Allie! Ah.
Picking up her bicycle, she pedaled madly in the same direction as the truck and brought her bike alongside. She reached out and grabbed a tie for the cargo bed's canvas cover. Valentine watched her disappear. He had little to do over the next 3 hours but refill their water bottles and worry. When she came coasting down the hill again, she had a huge smile.
I've got a date for tonight. Nice guy from New Philadelphia. Lance Corporal Scott Thatcher. He plays the guitar.
Thought you were leaving tonight.
Don't you want to know what I found?
You found something?
It's big, it's well guarded, and Thatcher didn't offer to take me to lunch inside, even with a lot of hints. Want to see?
Valentine picked up his bike as Duvalier shoved her coat into the basket on the back of her bike. They pushed up the hill.
What is it?
I'm not sure. It looks kind of like a hospital. There were ambulances out front, military and civilian. Big grounds, double fenced.
They topped a hill. Another loomed on the other side of a narrow gully. The road took a hairpin turn at a small stream.
I don't suppose your Corporal Thatcher illuminated you.
He said he was just a delivery boy.
A truck blatted through the trees. They pulled their bikes off the road and watched it negotiate the gully. It was an open-backed truck, filled with an assortment of uniformed men, some in bandages, some just weary-looking. They remounted their bikes.
Okay, it is a hospital. Why all the security, then?
They finally saw it from the top of the next hill.
This is probably as far as we should go. There's a watch post at the end of the trees.
Valentine couldn't see much through the trees, just a few salmon-colored building tops, at least a dozen stories tall. The ground leveled out past the hill, flat ground, and a straight road to a guarded gate beyond a half mile or so of open ground. Valentine looked through his many binoculars. Yes, there was a little watch station, about the size of a lifeguard's house at a beach, near the break in the trees.
Three layers of fencing with a road between. Outer layer is electrified. Innermost layer is just a polite 6 feet of glorified chicken wire. He dropped me off at the gate. The gatehouse looks normal enough, but 10 yards out to either side, there's tenting over something. I'm guessing heavy weapons.
Valentine did some mental math. This place was perhaps 20 minutes from the train tracks, in trucks driving 40 miles an hour.
Oh, Thatcher gave it a name.
He did?
He called it Xanadu.
Xanadu?
Yeah, mean anything to you?
I've heard the word. I don't know what it means. Fairyland or some such. You hanging around for your date?
I'm meeting him in Ironton.
Anka and I will check this out. Tonight.
They said goodbye to Price while Duvalier biked off to keep her appointment. Valentine decided he could trust Price with a message to Southern Command. Someone needed to know about Xanadu, if Price was willing to act as a courier. Valentine insisted on a farewell drink. Their supply of bulletproof had been much reduced in trading, but they still had a few stoppered bottles. They drank it inside the filthy motel room, windows and doors wide open to admit a little air.
Price, you ever run into any gorillas?
I avoid them if I can. I've had my guns commandeered off me. They've threatened to shoot B, too.
If you could get a message through to the Resistance, you'd really help the cause.
The cause? Not that shit again.
It's the only...
No! You don't tell me about the cause, boy. I know your cause. I know Everetti's cause.
How'd you come to know Everetti? What happened with those teeth?
Don't suppose you ever heard of a place called Coon County?
No.
Won't find it on your old maps. Nice little spot up in the mountains near Chattanooga, north of Mount Eagle. Called it Coon County because of Tom Coon, roughest son of a bitch you ever met. I'll bet he killed near as many reapers as Everetti. Old Everetti was our liaison officer with Southern Command. Got radio gear and explosives through him. We had a bad scrape and lost 26 men, captive. Colonel Coon, he had some quisling prisoners of his own. We kept him around, pulling plows or cutting wood, that kind of stuff. He went in alone to negotiate. We figured they hung him, since he vanished for a month. But wouldn't you know, he came back with 24. Said two had been killed before he could get there, and he exchanged the survivors for 24 of our prisoners. A few weeks later, this big operation got underway. Rattlesnake, I think it was called. Lots of gorillas involved. I missed it because I had Lyme disease. Tick bite. Put me on antibiotics and finally got a transfusion from old Everetti. Then Colonel Coon came back. He looked tired, but he took the time. Coon sat by each bed in the hospital, told a few jokes. He asked me how my wife was doing, if the baby had come. He had that kind of memory. Then the Reapers showed up. It wasn't any kind of a fight, any more than pigs in a slaughter pen put up a fight. Doc Swenson tried to get to a gun. He went down first. A nurse ran. I remember Coon wounded her in the leg, kneecapped her. The Reaper took a friend of mine, Grouse, we called him. The woman next to me blew air into her IV and died rather than have the Reaper take her. I just froze up. I couldn't move a muscle, not even my eyes, hardly. It killed the nurse right at the bottom of my bed. It fed, and Coon started staggering around. He was speaking so fast. Do you ever hear someone speaking in tongues, David? Words coming out as fast as voltage. The Reaper started dancing, doing this sort of waltz with the nurse's body as it jumped from bed to bed. Some of her blood and piss got on me as it swung around. That's when Everetti came in. He gave it a face full of buckshot and stuck a surgical knife in its ear. Then he drowned Coon in the slop bucket where they emptied the bedpans. He picked me up like I was a 6-year-old girl and ran. Well, there were Reapers everywhere. Coon had let them right in. They got everyone in Coon County. Even my wife. Everetti told me about how he'd heard from the Life Weaver what a seductive thing it was to feed on another man's spirit like that. He said humans could do it same as the others with the right training. Kind of like what the Life Weavers do to men like Everetti. I thought they got to Colonel Coon when he went to bargain about those 26 men. But Everetti said it was probably even before that. I felt dirty, living when Nat... everyone else died.
What's Coon County like now?
Just another Kurian zone, David. I gave up the war then. How are we supposed to win when they can grant a man immortality for joining in? The Kurian zone ain't so bad. The Reapers feed behind closed doors. It's like it's not even happening. A person gone now and then, like they walked off into the country and never came back. Even the end's not so bad, they tell me. The Reapers, they look into your eyes, and you see pretty meadows full of flowers and sunlight, or everyone you know who's dead welcoming you.
urging you on like you don't even feel the tongue going in. That doesn't sound so bad. A good Christian doesn't fear death.
He doesn't hasten it either.
Young and idealistic. You want to talk hastening death? You've been in battles. Who's got the better deal? The man in the Korean zone has plenty of food on the table, leisure time to spend, a family if he wants, children, even grandchildren if he keeps his nose clean. Compare that to you boys in the Ozarks. Get drafted, what, 16 is it now? Break your back in labor units until a rifle becomes available, and then you're dead by 20. How many virgins you buried, David? What kind of life did they have? Only people I'm setting myself against are those that want to make other people's tiny slice of life a misery. Murderers, rapists, child touchers, swindlers. That's my cause.
You're forgetting the biggest murderers of all.
You say? I say all they're doing is making it sensible and orderly. You get an orderly birth, an orderly life, an orderly death. I've come across dozens of folks running from the Koreans, or at least they started out that way. 2-3 days later, they're hungry and cold, and they ask me to lead them to food and shelter. Thank me for putting them back in the order, even if it's an NUC way station with a Reaper in the belfry. They want the order.
You keep telling yourself that, Price, if it makes you feel better. Wish I'd known the man Everready saved.
You missed him. I don't. Let's talk again in 10 years and see if you're still so sure of your cause.
Valentine rode his bicycle, and Ankah loped along, his gear tied to Valentine's handlebar and on the back of his bike. A distant whistle sounded curfew as the sun disappeared. And Valentine walked the bike off the road. They slept for 3 hours, long enough to give their bodies a break, then moved through the hills more cautiously. Valentine kept his life sign down and hoped that his old ability to feel the cold presence of a prowling Reaper hadn't been dulled by disuse. Sure enough, there was one in the gully with the hairpin turn on the road, keeping watch. They put earth and trees between themselves and the Reaper, threw a wide loop around.